Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to the next page of the Great Canadian Songbook. Can you believe I haven't said that once this whole show?
It's kind of shocking, actually.
That's a great intro, got it right down to the wire. Anyways, as we reel with the realization that we could have done, we might have to just run this one back and just start the whole thing from the beginning again.
Episode one more time just to get the intro.
Now that we've got the intro down, yeah. Of course, Great Canadian Songbook. Every week, my co-host Keegan and I, we have been running through... Keegan, say hello.
Oh, hi.
We've been running through a bracket challenge of Great Canadian Albums, and we've been pitting them against each other and, you know, last one standing. And this week, we begin the semi-final matches. So today, we will be deciding one of the finalists. That's the show. You're familiar. You're also familiar with how bracket works, unless you're us, in which case it's a struggle every week to figure it out. But before we hop into that, Keegan, how have you been doing? What's up? What have you been listening to?
What have I been listening to this week? I got back into my pop punk phase again. I hate to admit it, but I don't know what happened one day. Like I just put on some Blink because I hadn't listened in a while, like hardcore. And yeah. I kind of started going through some Neck Deep, and then A Day to Remember has a new album out. And I just kind of fell down the rabbit hole again.
You know, so. The sun's come out and you're ready to just get out of this town, you know?
Seriously though, like, I don't know what happened. Like, I was listening to like all this sad music, like when it was all wintry and everything. Now the sun's out, it's nice weather. And I'm like, I want to punch stuff. I'm like, yeah, like, oh, you know? So, yeah, it's definitely a change of pace, but I'm here for it. So, yeah, no complaints from my end. What about you? What are you listening to?
Very good. You know what I listened to on Sunday is the re-release of the original version of The Weeknd's debut mixtape House of Balloons, which I feel like we were a part of that in some strange way.
We manifested it without The Weeknd knowing.
We record on Tuesdays, and I believe between the time, I think it was like on like a Wednesday or Thursday, he does. Yeah. So between the time that we recorded the show and it had gone out, it had already been announced. And I thought that was very funny.
We're prophets. Nobody knows it, but we are.
Yeah. And what else? Is there anything else? I re-listened to The Strokes' latest album, The New Abnormal. Mm. I wasn't as hot on it when it first came out, but I feel like it sits up there in the pantheon with, you know, those first couple albums that I really like. I don't know if you know this, I'm a really big Strokes fan. So I was like, ooh, new album. They're too old to be good. Not true. It's a good album. The Adults Are Talking is kind of popping off on TikTok right now. So you might be familiar with that. A lot of e-boys dancing to that one, you know. It sounds like I'm joking, but I'm being serious. Yeah, you're serious. This is a real thing. So, yeah. The Strokes, highly recommend this extremely popular band that is not underground, as these TikTok e-boys may make you lead you to believe.
I'm so cool and hipster. Look at this old person music that I'm listening to.
It only has 800 million streams on Spotify. I'm underground. I don't know.
Justin Bieber has 2 billion. It's not the same.
Fuck. Yeah. Anyways, if I were to recommend a Strokes album, it would be Is This It, though. Great, great debut record from a very successful band. You don't need me to recommend Strokes to you. But yeah, you know what we do need to do, though, Keegan? We need to make a decision as well as discuss between this week's matchup. Our first semifinal matchup is 1992's Tragically Hip album Fully Completely against 2008's City and Colors, Bring Me Your Love. Two albums that, if you've been a listener to this show, you'll know that we are both very fond of. Specifically, Keegan is very, very fond. I am also very fond of City and Color, but Keegan specifically is very fond of both of these albums.
I want to put my head through drywall. It's crazy. Well, I want to go full Kyle, drink a Monster, and punch a wall, you know?
Do I have two great albums to do that to?
Yeah.
I don't sad. Even know what. Let's, you know what, Keegan, why don't he, I'll put the painful task on you. Why don't you recap both these albums for us?
I mean, if you want me to go through that trauma right now, I can do that.
Yes.
Tragically Hip. We'll start there because chronology. Fully Completely 1992. This is their third album, but technically their fourth release. They had an EP that came out called The Tragically Hip way back in good old 1987
late 80s.
Yeah, it's something around there. And so this record is
sorry to interrupt you. I saw a post, this is me gonna make a reference that I'm not really sure about. I saw a post on Instagram today from The Chord, who reviewed or reported on The Tragically Hip like in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, so that was in 88. They played at Laurier.
That's her.
Yeah, man. We're talking like early. And so that was when they played at Laurier. That would have been the year before Up to Here came out. So that was Blowin' High Dough, New Orleans Is Sinking, 38 Years Old, Boots Are Hearts. Big album for The Tragically Hip. So that was the year before they blew up. And really crazy stuff. The cool Laurier connection there. There's actually a post a couple weeks ago too about pictures of Rush playing in the Quad in 1971. And I looked at that and I went, God damn it. It's just, it's wild to think that like these icons, because that's kind of where they got their starts, right? Is like in these university crowds, university bars. That's where a lot of these Canadian bands really, really came up. So I saw that come up too the other day and I'm like, no fucking way.
Perfect.
It was a really, really cool article to come across there. And the fact that it was like right at their like breaking point, like right before they burst onto the scene is really cool.
Yeah, you can imagine those people now like poking up their glass and being like, well, I knew The Tragically Hip.
Yeah.
That's me with Nav. A joke.
it's kind of funny. I appreciate it. Crazy connection. Really, really cool. I think that stuff is the stuff of mythology, especially when you don't realize too. You're like, I go to school here and you're telling me that two of the greatest Canadian bands of all time played music in this spot.
And The Hip, they played in The Turret, which is like still a named like location on campus.
Yeah,
small. Oh, what's a small show too?
Well, yeah, it's crazy, right? Like that was like a functioning bar up until probably like 10 years ago. I think it was like a full on thing. So, and like my dad would tell me stories about like he's like, oh, like I was there once or twice, like when I was younger, and I'm like, it's fucking weird. you know, you're just like, nah, you're not allowed to be that young. it was a really cool thing. But what was I saying?
Damn. You're talking about The Hip.
I was talking about that. That's not really helpful. thank you. Fully Completely, anyways, came out kind of like right when they were breaking out. This was, I believe, their breakout album. Road Apples was the year before, if I'm not mistaken, and that was a fantastic record. And this one was kind of just the icing on the cake. I think if you talk to a lot of Hip fans, I think this is the one that really tops the charts for them. Hence kind of why we picked it. But it's really, really strong all the way through. It really creates their sound, what I believe their sound to be. I think this is the album that does it. They don't try to depart too much from what they find in themselves here. And I think it's a really, really special record. Without going too deep into all the songs, I do think it's a really, really special record. And did you want me to do City in Color too?
Yes, but I think we can stop still with The Hip and just talk a little bit about how like just insanely like massive and important they are to like Canada. It's so weird. We talked of course a little bit about this in our previous two conversations with this album, but like they're just such a like a massive cultural force in this country in so many ways. It's very fascinating. Like, I think you don't often see that. Well, you don't see it outside of America because American popularity is kind of like global popularity in a lot of ways. Like, you don't get something as concentrated as you would here. And then, of in other countries, you kind of get that same level of concentration, but obviously we don't know that, because that's the point of being like a national name without like really global influence. It's really, really fascinating, this group's size.
Yeah, they really just did something special. And actually, I'm curious, I'm going to bring up that article real quick, because there was a part in the article itself that I thought was really cool and gives some good insight into them. Sorry, I'm going to try and find it here just because I know it's on Twitter.
Yeah. I think it's almost just as interesting to think about in my opinion, as someone who is not like into them as much, like they're almost bigger as like a cultural force than they are a musical force.
Yeah.
Which speaks to, I don't think it speaks to the quality of the music, but rather the like enormity of what they mean as like a group of Canadians.
Yeah, and that's what the most amazing thing about them is. I think we talked about this too in one of the episodes, how like even when they were playing their last show, you know, you had Justin Trudeau like in attendance, you had all these people, and they quickly like they became larger than the music. And it's not to say that obviously they aren't so like so amazingly musically talented, but I don't think they were like, you know, breaking down genre or breaking down any anything like that. They just became what Canadians saw themselves in the Tragically Hip, and the Tragically Hip represented something about Canada, like in all their songs. I mean, I've talked about it, I've harped on it so much about like the names, the lyrics, the connections, you know, 50 Mission Cap, all these things, but it doesn't become about the music as much. It becomes about, you know, we're talking about, you know, a song called Her Courage. We're talking about Hugh McLennan, one of the greatest Canadian writers of all time. They're not talking about like themselves. They're not talking about the Tragically Hip. They're talking about something that came before them. They're talking about, you know, locked in the trunk of a car. Obviously the FEQ or FEQ, FLQ crisis in Quebec, 50 Mission Cap, talking about the Maple Leafs and hockey, like all these things that just combine to create what a Canadian is believed to be. And that's why I think everybody connected with them so much. And I just want to read this quick part of the article just because I did find it here.
Yes.
They're talking about influences and like being asked to describe their music. And Gord Sinclair, who plays bass, he said, "That's the job of the publicist. We play honest rock and roll." This was in 1988, 2 years after they were like got their start. He said, "People cite influences for the band like R.E.M. Clear, you know, you can find that. Or the Georgia Satellites, don't really know them. But you can't compare yourselves to current bands or else you will not be putting... or you will always be following them, not putting out any new material." And I found that super cool, because I think that you read that and then you kind of look at what they've become in the Canadian mythology, and they didn't try and copy other people. They did their own thing and they became their own echelon of Canadian culture, not even just music, of Canadian culture. Right. So I just find that really cool. And I wanted to bring that back up real quick, but hopefully I haven't ranted too much on that.
No. Yeah. I think that's super interesting, because I think it also speaks to this thing where we're like, well, they're a rock band, but what are their contemporaries? What are they like? And it's weird because it's really easy. It's really easy for like, you know, we talked a lot about the like early 70s, late 60s, like kind of like folk scene, like all those people moved to LA and like basically lived and slept with each other and like hung out and like, oh, so you could like see very easily where those influences and collaborations come from, between, I'm talking like Joni Mitchell, Neil Young, Bob Dylan, James Taylor, all those people we've talked about on the show before. With them, it's hard because they didn't just like move to Nashville or move to like New York and just like hang out with a bunch of like rock musicians. They kind of did their own thing. And so it's hard to kind of seek contemporaries for them at all.
Yeah. And I mean, like, even if you're to think of any, like, I think we've tried this exercise before too. Like, I can't, I just don't think of anybody who sounds like them. I just don't think anybody does. You know, there's a debate, I think, within Canadian, you know, music scene that like, oh, people often go, well, I think the Tea Party's the best Canadian band. And I'm like, no one's fucking heard of the Tea Party. And it's not to like completely diss the Tea Party, but they just, they don't have the same effect. They might be,
I have no idea who that group is. I'm
right. They're actually pretty good. I'm going to be honest, but like, or like some people will be like, I think UB40, some people are like, oh, UB40 are amazing. And I'm like, no. And the thing is, I think a lot of people look at it from the musical point of view, like I'm not going to disagree with anybody who tells me that the Tragically Hip are not the most creative musical band in the world. I'm not going to disagree with you. I think they have a very distinct sound, and it's not necessarily all that complicated in some respects. Like I think especially with their drums, they're not, you know, they're not changing the game. But they have their sound, they stick to it, and they're good at it. And so I think like they don't need to be that huge musical force. They just need to be a cultural force. And I think that's what they've been. Yeah. So I'm not sure if you looked up the Tea Party after my point, but
I did. I was reading I was listening. I was also reading about their association with the Tea Party movement in the 2010s in America. Rough time. Yep. Anyways.
Tough.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, they're such an interesting and like, I think they're also an interesting case study. I must have said this last time because that's all I think about with them, of like, what is Canadian and what makes Canadian culture and why do we make it? I think they're a very interesting example of that. I'm like the least nationalistic, isn't the term I want to use because that sounds super negative, but I'm like the least like, yo, rah, rah, I love Canada. Like I like living here kind of guy, but I'm not like, yo, let me fly that flag.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting to think of like a band who, did they create this for themselves or did it just happen naturally and it was given to them? And the answer is that like they just kind of did their thing and people kind of put this on them. But it's interesting. I think they would make an interesting case study, and I'm sure it's already been made, of like how national identity is created and why and what that even looks like.
I think it's just something where when you're looking for identity, you're looking for things that tie people together. And mm-hmm. when you have a group like the Tragically Hip that come along and go, hey, we're going to write a bunch of songs and they're all going to connect to certain events or certain things that have happened to us. You see them as the storytellers of what the identity might be, you know, mm-hmm. when they're talking about all these things, like they mentioned the prison in Kingston, and 38 years old. I can't remember. Do you remember the name of the, it's closed down now.
No, I can't remember.
It's bothering me now. But like they mentioned things like, I think it's just the Kingston Penitentiary. And they talk about that in 38 years old. You know, they talk about all these events that have happened to us. Like, you know, he scored the last goal of the One Leafs Cup, all these other things. It helps to tell the story of Canada, of the things that have happened, of, you know, our trials and tribulations or whatever it might be. And I think, I think every country has those people who do that in some way. I just think because we've historically maybe not had a specific attachment to one thing as an identity. I think especially in the 90s, in the early 2000s, we were kind of searching for something. I think you might have more on that than I do. But I think there was certainly a push to be like, hey, this is who we are, but we don't know who the hell we are. And I think the Tragically Hip kind of became a representation of who we are by telling us who we are. I know that sounds super like spirally like Alice in Wonderland-y, but yeah, that's the way that I kind of see it. And there's no right or wrong answer, I don't think.
Time and influence is a circle in some ways, and not in the like, oh, life imitates art, but like what came first, the identity or the identifier,
chicken signs, or the egg,
signifiers.
It's
impossible to ever truly know. But yeah, I think that's interesting. They're a really interesting group, and the quest of what we're doing is about the albums, but really it's about them as a whole. And we've also already talked about the album, so I don't think we really have to dig super deep into it again. But Yeah, I guess maybe, man, this is a perfect finale matchup in some ways to me, which is the problem. These two albums, I think we can talk about Dallas Green's Bring Me Your Love Now. It's, they're just so in concert with each other in so many beautiful ways. Keegan, take us through it a little bit.
Yeah, sure. So Bring Me Your Love is Dallas Green's second studio album from 2008, if I'm not mistaken. This album's kind of a little more upbeat than his original album, which was very like dark and basement-y, like basement recordings. But it's definitely still got that really mellow and honest vibe to it. I think we got a 12 to 14 track listing between that or the deluxe version. I can't quite remember. The two biggest songs to come off of this record, I argue, are probably his two biggest songs of all time. That would be The Girl and Sleeping Sickness. Sleeping Sickness, notably, obviously featuring Gord Downie of The Tragically Hip. So fun little connection that we finally gotten to make and come to light here. Really, really amazing record, really down to earth. And again, very light on drums, not really a whole lot going on there. Not really a full band except on a couple of songs. Really, really down to earth record is the best way that I always come back to describing it. It just feels like a man and his guitar trying to tell you a story. And I really appreciate that about the record. I appreciate that about any record that can do that. I think that's why Joni Mitchell's Blue has made it so far in the other side of the rounds here. Sorry, I couldn't think of the word. I think it's a really, really amazing record. Again, I think it's his best record, which again is why I think we chose it. I'm just going to look at it real quick because I know most of the songs, but I don't want to mess them up while I'm trying to talk about it. I think that Constant Knot has probably one of the best closers, or it's not a closer on the album, but in terms of the way the song goes and fades out, I think it's really amazing. In the most complimentary way possible, I fall asleep to this album all of the time, not because it's a bad album, but because it is soothing and it makes me feel good and it makes me question life quite a bit, actually, sometimes. I think it takes a lot for music to have that effect on a person. So those are my subjective ramblings of how I feel about this record. Again, I think it's really, really, really strong. I don't think he ever made a record as good as this, not to discount his other records, but I just think that this is the cream of the crop.
Yeah, this record, I've already kind of expressed my love for it. It's so interesting too, especially when we're thinking of, like, in comparison to Fully Completely and Tragically Hip. And I think Dallas Green provides so many interesting parallels, maybe more specifically to Gord Downie as like individuals, of just kind of like dudes who did their own thing and kind of gained their cult following for it. And it just so happens that their own things are very similar in many ways. This record is very solid, and I won't harp on it too much because I'm a little more interested in like the way these two intertwine. I think it's interesting. I was kind of looking at the rest of kind of his studio album discography. It's very interesting how he's kind of gotten progressively a little louder and then a little more experimental. Like If I Should Go Before You is pretty much a rock record. Like it's a little like bluesy rock record. And then Pill for Loneliness, if I remember correctly, because I don't love this album very much, is a little more like experimental in some ways. It's very interesting to see kind of his evolution and in some ways his fizzling out in terms of cultural relevance, in my opinion. Not that like being super popular as like number one, but it's he's had a very interesting career. And of course he's one of the lead vocalists for Alexis on Fire, which post-hardcore, is that what you would define them as? I don't know. Yeah. He's had a very interesting career. one that's like kind of consistently successful. Like if you look at the numbers, like all of his albums have debuted at number one since the one in Canada. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It feels like his kind of career has kind of waned a little bit in some ways.
Yeah. And I to be fair, like I think everybody does to some extent. I think you find it at one point and then you kind of lose it at another point. I think, you know, the same can be said for The Hip. They found it right off the bat.
Yeah.
And that's they fair. Kind of, correct. And they, I think they had it. I think we talked about this in the last time we talked about them until about, in my opinion, about 2000, 2001, they just had it. Right. I think for Dallas, I think Alexis on Fire came on the scene in 2002, 2003. Up until probably about 2013, he just had it. Alexis on Fire made all of their records in that time. City and Caller, I think, made their best records in that time, obviously just being him. If I Should Go Before You, that one you can just see the departure. He's really going for more of, hey, I just want to do this thing and I'm gonna do it. Mm-hmm. He did it. Same with A Pill for Loneliness. To be honest with you, I listen to more from A Pill for Loneliness now than I do every one of his other records. I love the spacey, loopy bedroom shit. That stuff makes me so happy. And also, like, I've listened his other records to the like into the ground. And it's not to say that they're bad and that I don't still love them, because I do. I'm just like, hey, new thing. I'm going to listen to the shit out of the new thing. And definitely his weakest record for sure. The new one, but not bad in my opinion by any means. But yeah, like I think you're on the money there. I think everybody's got their span. I tie it to so many other bands, like the Foo Fighters. 2011 was probably the last time they made like, you know, an amazing record, right? They had their period of like 95 to 2011. And ever since they've been making music, and it's been good music, but it hasn't been their best music. Same can be said for the Tragically Hip. The same can be said for Rush after probably 2002, maybe earlier, depending who you are. And the same can be said for Dallas Green. So I think just every person, every musician, every group, they've got their timeline, and they don't necessarily make bad music after that, unless you're the Rolling Stones, who probably should have stopped 20 years ago. It's just my opinion. Paul McCartney, looking at you as well, although your songs are not bad. So I just mean that to say that, yes, definitely correct. Luckily, I think this album is like, it's just his peak. Like, it's just the point where he went, whoop, and he didn't really hit that again.
I think also the idea of kind of being like a middling successful artist is like the easiest, not the easiest, but like easier than it's ever been in some ways, where like there's so many different avenues to be a quote unquote successful artist that you don't have to be like touring stadiums to be like popular.
And to be honest, like it, as much as I love these as like a good metric, I don't trust record sales for shit anymore.
That's
ever since 2012, probably, I don't really, you know, like I just don't think it has the weight that it used to have. Certainly still important, obviously. But you know, you look at streaming and you know, if Dallas were to have a concert when everything opens up, as City and Color, he's selling that concert out and he's probably doing two or three nights at like the ACC. You know what I mean? So
correct.
You know, same with the Arkells, like they can go out and they do the rally. They've done that every year for 3 years and they sell out a football field of 28,000 tickets. Like, come on. Right. So, anyway, sorry, I don't know how I got on that tangent, but that's also another metric where I go, yeah, this also helps.
Yeah, it's very interesting. The kind of like what a career in music looks like now is almost like unrecognizable compared to even 10 years ago.
Yep.
Interesting stuff. Sure. So, Keegan, these two albums, these two collectives of musicians in some ways, what do we do here?
It's a really good question. I've been saying this for at least a week, probably longer. This is going to be our hardest matchup, in my opinion, because I think on one hand, you have the album. Mm-hmm. Where I think if I were to look at this list when we had gone into it objectively, looked at this list and gone, what's going to win? I would have gone that one. And I wouldn't put in it fully completely. Mm-hmm. Maybe Moving Pictures, which also crazy, that got, kind of not wiped out, but taken out pretty quickly. So I'm not sure, because I think, and we've talked about this a lot personally, I factor in my personal opinion quite a bit, or else this wouldn't be a show. And, you know, so personally, like I will always listen to Bring Me Your Love more, because I have more of an attachment to it. Mm-hmm. What's the better album? This is the first time where I genuinely just don't know, because I love them both for different reasons. Like if I want to sit in my bed and relax and fall asleep and maybe be a little bit sad, I'm putting Bring Me Your Love on. If I'm out in my backyard skating around, shooting pucks, drinking beers, when we got snow on the ground, like I was back in January for like that entire month, I'm putting Fully Completely on, man. You know, I'm going out at a campfire. I want to drink with some friends. Like, not that they'll all like my music. But I'm putting Fully Completely on. They do two separate things, but they're both my go-to albums for different reasons.
Yeah. This one's very tough for me too, because on one hand, I like the music of both these albums a lot. I'm just like much more attached to Bring Me Your Love, but there's something so insanely fascinating about the Tragically Hip and what they are and what they mean and what they've done. They're so like rich for like thought and and listening, honestly. Fully Completely is a great album. I find myself humming it like some days, and even like through listening to this album, I've listened to, you know, some of the hits, and they got some good songs, believe it or not. They're not just a band who was Canadian that was popular, which is what a lot of people say about some Canadian bands that are popular. They got some good music.
Yeah. And my thing, what I'm trying to separate, because I think they're both, you know, I've touched on this a lot throughout talking about this, is like, I think they're both really authentic and honest records. I don't think they try and screw around. I think they come out and they say, this is what I am, this is what I'm trying to do, and take it or leave it. Right. And that's, it's not going out to try and, you know, chart, to try and obviously they're trying to sell records, but they're not, they're not going out, you know, to try and say, I'm just making music for the sake of it, and I don't care if it's good or not. I think the songwriting on both of these albums is phenomenal, for different reasons, especially Dallas Green, Bring Me Your Love. I think this is his best songwriting of anything that he's done. You know, the introspective, like what makes a man, like the title alone, you're just like, fuck, what does make a man? You're like, that's a really good question. And like, obviously it gets a little bit more in depth, but, you know, Waiting, he talks about, you know, we're all just waiting to die. Talks about like funeral processions on Body in a Box. He's talking about, you know, confessing sins, like all these things that just feel like it's not music. I know obviously it's music, but like, it sounds like it's more like I'm going to write in my journal. And, these are the things that I'm thinking. This is what I think about. Here's a look into my head. This is what's going on. And I compare that with the Tragically Hip, where they're obviously like they're both storytellers, Gord Downie and Dallas Green. They're both storytellers. Mm-hmm. But I look at Gord Downie on Fully Completely specifically, and he's trying to tell a story. I don't think we're getting a look into Gord Downie. We're getting a story. Mm-hmm. And also, I don't think he had started writing all of their songs for this record yet, or if that was after this, I can't quite remember. But I feel like this might have been their last group writing record.
I remember reading about this and him being a little, I am the writer of the music. I can't remember. Right. I can't remember though.
Yeah. So it was either here or after, but yeah. But regardless, so I'm not sure what I'm trying to get at there. I damn, man. Yeah. They're both. I'll leave this, and then I'm gonna let you go. But I think they're both extremely important records. But I don't think there's any denying the cultural importance of Fully Completely as a record by itself.
Yeah, I think I agree. There's just something so like monolithic about the. About both Tragically Hip and I thought of this in some ways it's kind of like Gord Downie is like an author more than a writer in some ways, where I don't know if there's an actual difference between the two, but it feels like he's like penning something as opposed to like writing down, you know, just fancier words for things. There's something like in depth going on there. And honestly, I know we've made some questionable decisions in the past, but I feel like even before listening to a word of any Tragically Hip, I knew this album should probably be in the final. And that's not like, oh, I think we have to do this. I thought that for a reason, and I think it's still the right answer.
It's interesting for me because like I feel like. I feel like this album, Sitting Color, I feel like it deserves to be there. Mm-hmm. But I'm also conscious of the fact that like I know it's just because I love it. I think there could be other folks who go into this and go, I don't get the whole acoustic thing. I don't get the whole one guy and a guitar thing. And obviously those people aren't doing this. We are, so screw them. I'm hesitant, but I'm also like, can I really do this and go, Dallas, you take out Gord Downie and the Tragically Hip, who are not just musical icons, which I think Dallas Green is a musical icon for Canada, but they're cultural icons. Can Dallas Green be a cultural icon? Maybe he can be in the future. But like you were saying before, time, right? Like you need the time. Like it's been 30 years next year since Fully Completely came out. It's been 13 since this one came out. So like, it's not like no sample size, like obviously, you know, like there's something to work off of, but I'm just like, I can't, you know, like I just can't do it to them and go, yeah, this album wins. I can't do it. I can't.
It's and a I tough want one.
To, I want to.
No, I do too. I think it's the right, I think it's the right decision though for us. I think it's okay. It's going to be okay. We're good with
so
it then.
Sad.
Tragically Hip.
I think we're good with it. And yeah, it's just a tough one. I think it was a tough competition going into it. We should do like a bronze medal bracket between the ones that lose.
That's a good, yeah. That's a good idea actually, because I think mostly we just want to give some love to Bring Me and Bring Me Your Love, which is a completely fair thing to do. All right,
I know.
We've done it. We've come to our first finalist. 1992's Fully Completely has taken out 2008's Bring Me Your Love. And you know what? That's okay. It's going to be okay. We've made it through this far. We can make it one more time. We can make it two more times even. So yeah, that's the first round of the semifinals done. Looking up, we've got next week, looking forward, we've got the weekend going up against Joni Mitchell.
Damn.
Just duking it out. and we will not be factoring in the original cuts from House of Balloons. Sorry. Yeah, what next week's gonna be harder in so many different ways, or it's gonna be just as hard in so many different ways.
Very different for sure.
If we ever had two of the kind of like exact same kind of album, which we had this week, where it's just like they're so like they're even if they're not musical thing, like just hitting on the same notes.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
we have the complete opposite, at least sonically, with Joni Mitchell and The Weeknd. So, yeah, that's something. And then we're looking, after that, we're going into the finals where we'll decide a winner and then just congratulate them and mail them that award that we've been talking about. I guess, I don't know. Well, we'll end it off with a bang somehow. But yeah, Keegan, you got any final words, any advice for the people out there?
I feel like I should have thought about this beforehand. Make sure that you change your bed sheets.
I did laundry this morning.
Good for
I
you. Washed them.
It's important to wash.
Yes, especially if you have a significant other coming over. Please wash your sheets. You should be doing it anyways.
You should.
But wash your sheets.
It's important. What's my advice? My advice is if you decide to pick up an acoustic guitar, The Girl is like one of the easiest songs you can learn to play, and it feels so good to play it. So try to pick that one up first. It's very easy. That's my piece of advice. And I guess on that note, we'll be running out of the show. So make sure you tune in next week for our second semifinal match. And till next time, True North Strong and Free? I don't know.
Sure,
from
good
far
with it.
And wide? Yeah, no, from far and wide. I like that one better.
Bye-bye.